Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, November the 10th, 2015, and this is hour 289 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor, and return to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to say once again, thank you, James, from North Wales, Pennsylvania, for hosting or helping to host all the hours, which totally covers all the hours. We all appreciate you, what you're doing. Thank you very much. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Yeah. Welcome back from the top of the mountain.
Well, yeah. Gonna go up there again pretty soon. Anyway, it's just one of those things I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really is winter up there, in the winter. Sometimes it snows and...
Yeah, it hasn't snowed for a while. Well, yeah, it snows, but then it melts off.
Mm-hmm. When I was on Maui one time, I was up in Kula, and I saw this little, like, a Toyota pickup truck coming down from Haleakala, and it had all the snow in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, they wanted to show everybody down there, hey, look. Look what's on top of the mountain.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Look how slippery and cold it is, like shave ice.
Yeah, they come zooming down the mountain, trying to keep their ice.
Mm-hmm.
And they succeed. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was surprised that they actually were able to get a good amount of it down the hill.
Oh, you mean, that they succeeded bringing snow down?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's pretty, you know, throw a blanket over it, go on down.
Mm-hmm.
People carry ice like that all the time, but when it comes down to snow, you know, from the top of the mountain, must have wanted to show grandma or somebody who couldn't go up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was on Oahu, I showed Uncle Ho's friends on Sunday some videos I took up on top of Haleakala, and he says, mm-hmm. Oh, he went up there in a Model T. And then later on, I said something about, oh, that was funny, you sang a Model A. Oh, no. No, Model A never make it. Model T.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been up there since, he said.
Oh, that was a real adventure back then.
Yeah.
The road was basically cinder. The path that it took was almost the same. Almost the same. Actually, they use a lot of the old, I guess you might call it just the horse trails.
Because
the horses didn't work them that hard, you know, trying to get up there. They'd run a meandering, you know, wander up through there. Sometimes it push them hard, but yeah. Go up and reverse some of the old Model A's. Couldn't make it up. You had to go up backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went up backwards in a four-wheel drive up on Mauna Kea. All the gas went to the wrong end of the tank, and the engine stopped. So the last couple miles, we just backed up the rest of the way. But anyway, it's beautiful up there. It's really like up on top of the world. When you are up on top of the clouds, above the clouds, and you look down at the clouds, you go, is that the ocean or is that the clouds?
Yeah, well, it doesn't look as nice when you just see clouds. You like to see the, you know, feeling like a picture of my car. I took a picture of my car at an angle where it seems like got the ground out just at the tires, took it at an angle. Looks like the car was parked on top of the clouds, literally.
Well, it literally is parked up on top of the clouds.
Yeah.
Well, it's beautiful up there, and just goes to show how beautiful the earth is.
And I was thinking that I remember reading some things in the Irancha book concerning some of the architectural spheres. I mean, the very large ones, extremely large, and that there are no high mountains. So there are hills, but no high mountains. And I was thinking, oh, my, how I enjoy looking at and going up the high mountain, 10,000 feet, you know, often enough to enjoy it, but there's no high mountains. And there wasn't any in the New Jerusalem either. At Saturn, it was it was structured differently than the extremely large architectural worlds. Not spheres. The New Jerusalem is an architectural sphere. And along the inner walls of it, which can be miles and miles thick, are essentially habitations that all have windows that peer into the center of open space. Mm-hmm. And then you can see, if you're low enough, you can see some of the floating places like the garden, which you get ushered through right away. The lower levels are more familiar with, you know, like our planetary environment. You know, when I landed on the inner deck, you get put on a huge landing bay. But they immediately don't let you wander around in that place. Kind of let you get out there and walk right into a garden. Trees, meadows, even birds in the trees. I went when it was still and the birds weren't moving. They were like sleeping, I think.
You must have thought, where am I?
It says, well, cool, you got... No, I kind of had a smart-alecky attitude, like, oh, yeah, you bought some trees over here, you know. Gee, your forest isn't that gigantic, you know. I can't get lost in here because everything is so well laid out. It's like a park, you know. Mm-hmm. In fact, it basically is what it is. It's a park.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And, yeah, it would trail. The trails are well laid out, and, you know, and they kind of lead you through this area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's probably some streams and stuff over the way, but I didn't. I just noticed that, all I did notice was that, wow, you guys try to make us feel it right at home when we land. Mm-hmm. You know, and come in there. Or is this your way of, you know, saying, oh, I've got a piece of the planet Earth over here? But I'm not sure, anyway.
And what did they say to that kind of comment of yours? Earth.
Yeah, they said, they said something like to the effect of, it is example of your planet's environment in one area. It was a temperate type environment, not tropical, you know. So, yeah. Tropical, you get like more into jungle, like heavy and humid, and it's uncomfortable. But the temperate environment is more comfortable, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, temperature about, wasn't freezing, it wasn't hot, it was right in the middle. I would say about 70 degrees, 72, 73, 74, 75, something around there. As soon as it gets over 75, then you kind of like getting toward a warm area. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just walk through there. Yeah. And then we went inside, back inside, around through the forest, back inside, and then all sort of like, okay, now I'm Is this another world? Oh, no, this is not. This is the whole, you know, growing. And it's a growing sphere. I'm sure it's a lot larger now than it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of like our Earth, but just in a total another place.
Well, one part, the initial part, I think that may be a routine they may do for any human being taken from planet Earth, mm-hmm. Urantia, and put there for, you might say, a gift of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they all get to forget it, interestingly enough. They all have to forget.
Until you're allowed to remember.
You're allowed to remember. There's
which is really too bad, because usually you remember really well in the beginning. Wow, you can really tell where you were.
Mm-hmm.
But to come back and not have anything to say. What did you do yesterday? Oh, I don't remember.
All I did remember was, where did the people go? The really nice people.
Oh.
That's where I went and asked my mother, my dad, my sister, where did they go? And they all looked at me, almost answered, and said, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Almost like, so there was some interface with to my family. Also, I had perhaps a bit of an interface because, you know, put them to sleep or say hello or something and then goodbye.
Mm.
Not like what I did was like, oh, you know, I guess it must have been the reason that they came, Tananila and the pilots, whatever, who piloted it. They weren't the pilots, Tananila.
Mm-hmm.
When they said one and Tenjin one.
They were just the tour guide.
I don't know what. They're more like a, they seem to be, when I type them out, they're like anthropologists.
Hmm.
You know, but they also contribute. They also, they want to, they're probably part of the volunteer team to, for planetary uplift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they don't, you know, they don't want to keep us in the Stone Age, you know, or, you know, primitive time. There's a time right now I did realize that they do want us to go back and pick up what we left behind. And some of that stuff that we left behind is good technology, you know. And we were, it's like Tesla's good technology that was left behind because wasn't any money in it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just need to know how to use it and function without the necessity of making the world go around with money.
Well, that paradigm is going to shift because of the nature of the system. Eventually, it does break down, and we're close to it, if not right on the doorstep of that, mm-hmm. right now. This year, next year, we're going to be looking at a meltdown probably in Europe first. The new economies, the giant ones like China coming on board, they'll feel it too. So they'll get effective. But looking at toward Europe, Europe is, a big problem. When I went over to Spain and I went through there, there's a place or an area of Spain that wants to break away from the Spanish government. They don't even consider themselves Spanish, but that's where Barcelona is, part of that area. And That area just, I think a little while ago, maybe a day ago. Well, it's in the news. I got some news on it. It's called Catalonia. Mm-hmm. That area in Spain. So that's where I first kind of wondered about it. You mean Spain is not all one, you know, country that gets along well? No. Found that out when we went over there. But Catalonia, that part in Spain, has voted to separate from Spain by 2017. And they already have started minting their own currency, which is also kind of away from the euro, because the euro is going to basically fall apart. The European Union, euro-based mm-hmm. concept of independent countries trying to act like a unified government. When they don't, unity in people is not able to be truly united under governmental control. The spirit of people are really unified under a matter of heart, you know, which is much more based in, you might say, divine guidance. You know, there's that nature of humanity. When things like money or government get into a point where they start to limit it or break down the trust in it, then of course the matter of heart no longer can function fully, and you need to break away from that. A big failure in that was in the communist countries, like Russia's failure. USSR, the Soviet meltdown was because of that too, because the economy didn't follow. But anyway, this is the new concepts of what's happening in the planetary in terms of going back. You know, it's kind of like what's pointing it to me in terms of where they want to guide the planet. So go back, pick up some things that you left behind. And don't bring this other junk forward. And a lot of that stuff that we are actually capable of doing is, you know, helping, stronger helping the weaker. And of all people that are doing that right now is China. And China's not all that strong. They think people, wow, they can go through there and not even help their own people. But, you know, actually, when you look at the Chinese people out in, you might say, the country areas, they have their own micro economies that actually still function with barter and trade. Even when I went over to, you know, like other places, like in Indonesia, which had a little island community of Bali. And Bali has many of these barter type exchanges in terms of basic things like food, even shelter. So building materials and food were exchanged. You build a house, you get food, you get, you know, families and places to live. And that little island of Bali, how many million, couple 2 million, or that's like 3 million maybe. It was amazing how they could fit all that people and develop all the food they needed, all the rice they needed, in fact have it in excess, more than they need, and fit it on an island the size of Maui. You know, and Maui at one time had population that it was equivalent to what we have right now in terms of, you know, our present paradigm of living, and have it, you know, with basically a agrarian culture of, you know, growing the food you need and, you know, harvesting the oceans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of amazing. I went up to one valley where they were like, whoa, you mean there were that many people in this valley? And yeah, it was all wiped out by childhood disease. You know, chicken pox, mumps, measles. Yeah, so population was just decimated, not because they couldn't support themselves in terms of food or need or lifestyle, because they got sick from common childhood diseases that were brought over from the East Coast with the industries that were initially brought over, whaling, and some say that it was the missionaries, but it was all part of the movement into the islands.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a question from Wendy for Shaharon's response. Okay, she writes October 22nd. She says, subject is Inner Earth Theory, Agartha. Dear gents, I have recently been asked by my 18-year-old daughter, Crystal, if there's any truth to the hollow Inner Earth Theory. I remember reading a book many years ago about a father and son's account of their journey on a boat after surviving a mighty storm and sailing into uncharted waters. They arrived at a place known as Agartha, Inner Earth. I can't say if this was fact or fiction, but I allowed my imagination to roam for in the story. Agartha resembles a community of light and life, which made this such a pleasant read. I would greatly appreciate the Shaharon's response to whether there be any truth to this or not. And then she has a link to the Inner Earth and Realm of Agartha, and you can find her letter on the listen page, and she closes by saying, with that link, Voyages to the Inner Earth and the Realm of Agartha, view on www.thenewreath.org. With warmest greetings from New Zealand, signed Wendy. So she would like to know about what Paul writes about, Paul J.S.
Mm-hmm.
About this thing about the Inner Earth. It's not really spelunking. It's a bigger thing than that.
Yeah, we have here in Hawaii, even for myself, moved through, even sailed into, took my boat, or even went into areas that were like kind of a big cave. And it's immediately when you get in there, you just get this disconnect from the outside world. And you just like are in a different world. Even as small as it is, the ceiling, the ceiling of these open lava tubes that enter into the ocean, some of them are gigantic. They're way up there. It's, now a lot of the remnants of them are useless little adventures where, the tourist trade takes people through there, through the arches and the caverns.
You mean the lava tubes?
Yeah, well, they're touched into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some that people get stuck in that are terribly, terribly dangerous, because you will not come out of them if you get lost. If you fall into a lava tube, because of the way it's structured, and you cannot, pile up anything and get out the way you came.
No.
Basically, looking up into the ceiling area and miles upon miles, because you got to remember, the lava tube would structure itself all the way from the top of the mountain all the way to the sea, wherever the, you know, the lava was flowing. And
could be 60 miles.
Yeah. You try doing that in the dark. My goodness, you know, and the bottom that is maybe you can't really find it smooth. It's really rugged.
Oh.
So, you know, it's much nicer to stay out in the, you know, the open and fall in a lava tube. So, and I know a person who did, and he came out quite a different person.
I remember you saying how his friends went and found his truck.
Yeah, and went to look for him.
And there's a hole in the ground.
Yeah, and they missed the hole because it was so small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finally, they kept probing around and they found him. Anyways, he was going through a lot of terror in that time.
So as far as what they call the hollow earth, a whole area, and we've seen drawings with a sun in the middle, just looks like, and clouds, and sounds like the New Jerusalem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way.
It sounds like a manufactured a mined out area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, can Shaharon tell us if there is such a place? Or if you could show us how to find it? Because I've read stories about people climbing a mountain, going behind a rock and finding a passageway and going down this long tube corridor and then seeing a headlight coming toward them. And turned out to be a sled from old technology, but very modern. Crazy story, but that was years ago.
Oh, yes, this is Eric.
Hello, Eric. Shaharon. Yes.
It's interesting that you would say that, but in the light of things concerning old technology, you must remember that many of the structures that were initially placed upon the planet Rancha were, might say, bases, waypoints, structures, as we have on the moon presently. Your orbiting planet or orbiting moon does have a active facility of ours, and it is used as a intermediate point in an observation area. We do some gathering of material mining, but most of the material that we need is much easier found. Urantia, early structures were placed upon the surface, but would not endure, especially during the time of the Ice Ages. And we found that structures could be more enduring if they were placed beneath the ground. And they were not as expansive as you might have thought they were in the descriptions that others have used, right, describe these underworld areas. But they indeed are large. You can literally fly an aircraft in it. But they are, you might say, specialized bases as presently. We still are not able to reveal every detail of what goes on because there are many, many things that do take place there that have to do with the governance of the fallen sector. The governance of the fallen sector requires that there be others involved in the continual operation in the very remote regions. And as you're well aware, your heavens are quite spread out, and Rancha is far on a very distant area of some of the locations of the closer, more well-developed both planetary and environments which were structured, or as the Rancho book calls them, architecturally developed architectural spheres. You might say we follow similar patterns in the way in which we structure some of these inner earth structures. They tend to be spherical, yet connected by interconnecting tunnels. These tunnels are not necessarily just a, you might say, open gap. They are literally connected through interdependent dimensional pathways. These seem like open connections if you were to move through them, but they are not. If you were to operate or look to them from a different perspective, which is within your own environment, they would seem like solid rock. But it is not the case in many of these openings, which are essentially the same way we can move through solid material. Therefore, some of that which was seen and observed was as only a view, not as a real experience in terms of overall exploration of these cavities. Again, there are many natural openings, and the natural openings sometimes do interface with the, you might call them inter-earth or inner-earth structures, artificial, as if we were making them. They actually appear as, you might say, a type of metamorphic growth, changes in the material, and it results in not necessarily requiring mining or movement. As you would structure a tunnel, you dig through and remove material, leaving a opening. Many of these that were structured, we use a very different method, and one that you will be learning one day how to do and how to use. And you'll find that there are many planets that would have structured themselves to become hollow. The reason for that, many of these becoming hollow, is because these structures or planets have become irradiated by various sources of energy, especially their own sun. Their magnetic fields have become very weak, if not non-existent. Planet Urantia is definitely not the case. It has a very lively electromagnetic field, a shielding, which if was erased would simply eradicate a great portion of life on the surface. And the need for moving underground would, for a higher civilization, be not necessarily a difficult thing to accomplish. But in the case of what is spoken about, this various explorations and different incidences where people have actually come back with testimony of observing the underground world. It is true. So they are not populated by your human population today. Because it isn't necessary. In the early earth structures that were necessary to build, they were placed under the ground. As you can tell, structuring a sphere, a large sphere in space, is time-consuming, although it's much more elaborate and can be much more beautiful than a structure that could go underground, such as what you have on other planets populated closely within your own solar system. An example, first of all, would be your own moon. And next would be other close by planets, such as Mars and Venus, or those which have underground structures also.
I heard Venus has an underground world or underground civilization.
Well, your old ancient human populations did create underground cities. These were quite elaborate. And of course, they were very primitive, but nevertheless, they moving underground for a population of humans was at their time necessity. So there were other times in which other populations were guided by us to move underground. You would look at some of the ancient histories or even legendary origins of people. The Japanese on the island community were led by our people to save themselves by moving into an underground domain, which was fabricated already and made ready for them and their dwelling for a time, after which they were allowed to return to the surface.
Are you referring to in the middle of the 40s? The 1940s?
No, this is much, much longer. A time period thousands of years ago.
Oh, I see. And Shaharon, you're saying the Japanese went underground at that time, thousands of years ago?
Yes, in order to survive the environment.
And what was happening on the surface of the earth at that time in that area of the world?
It was a mix of natural bombardment from your own sun and some that did come from out of your solar system.
Could you be more specific what you mean, out of our solar system?
Yes.
That means that out of all the planets in our solar system, from outside our solar system?
Yes.
Are you referring to trouble?
No, this is something that would happen and could happen to your planet again.
Oh.
You would not have enough warning. The velocity of such a energy bombardment would be nearly that speed of your detectors.
Mm-hmm.
It would require us knowing and simply moving. We would, in time, have such a advantage, perhaps you might call it, to be able to move faster than the velocity of light, to be able to warn you people. It would be very selective, not a broad sweep.
And was this only centered around the island of Japan from outside, or was this the whole planet that was affected from outside our solar system?
It was the entire planet.
Was this a shock wave, or what could you tell us? And what was it from?
It was a shock wave from an exploding planet, star, as well as its planets, that were consumed in a mighty explosive action, producing a bombardment of more than just highly charged particles, but energetic waves, that some of which you know about, others which you do not. As you are aware of the sun's recent bombardment of your planet only a few days ago, a flare, as well as its ejections from the sun, did impinge upon your planet, creating a smaller interaction, some of it resulting in earthquakes. But they can be much, much, much more powerful energies that set off both sun as well as coming from the actual primary wave from this, outside.
This shock wave or explosive action thousands of years ago, were the pyramids in Giza built at the time, or were they not built at that time?
They were built at the time.
And
the complex was built where the pyramids are today. You see, the complex is built on the complex, which is built on the... So the pyramids stand upon a complex of ancient, much older structures, some of it which is no longer there. Evidence, you will find that the oldest element that is visible there is much, much older than the pyramids.
Yeah. And what is that that's older?
The
foundation, you mean?
The sculpture, the giant sculpture of the animal man.
Oh, the Sphinx. We call it the Sphinx.
It is been distorted many times. It is quite old. It was there.
And recently, within the last, I'll say, 50 years, they showed how there was water erosion around that animal man at one time. You can see the lines of water, of what water would do. Seems like nothing else would do it. But
there was much a different climate then. It was very, very tropic. Very, very, very different.
So the Sphinx was there before the pyramid complex was there?
The complex was there. The pyramids were built upon the complex. The location was selected much, much earlier than when the pyramids were structured there. But the pyramids themselves were a guided structure initially, mm-hmm. you know, to have multiple functions. Simple pyramidal structure as it is, inert, without the installations inside of them, still will function as a energy absorber and distributor. The energy that is absorbed and distributed has a lot to do with the health of the area. But the overall climate must match. But it does not anymore.
Do you mean the overall climate of our entire planet?
No, match? The entire planet is, of course, shifting. You should well be aware of your own science's understanding of the movement. And, of course, you understand that the area around there was much, much greener. Even rivers have dried up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was a important structure in terms of bringing forth highly productive, you might say, fruitful areas.
So, the pyramids were... We have all these drawings and show how humans could build the pyramids. And my gosh, we didn't have ropes or people on the planet to pull those huge boulders up 450 feet in the air. And people often wonder who built the pyramids and why were they built? Well, you just said they were a guidance structure and... energy absorber and distributor?
Yes.
And would the pyramid still function as that if it was activated again?
Oh, they are in a way, in a very low intensity way, still functioning in a similar, because the pyramidal form is very important in bringing forth that.
Mm-hmm.
Triangular nature of triangles. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting things about the pyramids, that they're perfectly lined up to the north, and there's a shaft in there that when you get to the bottom, in the pit, that it doesn't matter whether it's daytime or nighttime, it points directly at the North Star. I always thought that was almost like a celestial signature to show who built them, or where the builders came from.
From the North Star?
Well, I don't know from the North Star, but this shaft points toward the, you know, lines right up with the North Star when you're down in the pit. Of course, you have to have a mirror in there. It goes up and then it shoots up again. But the light from the North Star comes in that passageway. I often wondered where the signature is of who built them. And it's interesting that they still could function.
Do you not consider that a signature?
Well, I guess if we don't know how to run it or control it or use it or operate it, or it's like, well, we have these things called helicopters, and if you can't fly a helicopter, all you can do is get in and, you know, read the time on the clock. or get in out of the rain. We can't do it. You can't, if you can't function, if you can't use the equipment. So I feel like the pyramids is something we just can't use because we don't know how to work it. Are there instructions or what can you tell us about how to run the pyramid?
There are many things that the pyramid was made for, but the strongest part was necessary to stabilize it for the distribution of special energy. Special energy that you talk about, that I talk about, is what is available to us used. It makes possible interdimensional function. Energy, travel, time dilation, time gating. Time dilation sometimes is required in, to do work with materials, material formations, ability to soften even solid rock at a very low temperature. In fact, natural temperature. Hmm. Yes. There are many other things that you will learn shortly, but most importantly, you must turn from the divisiveness that has stifled your civilization's ascent toward the divine nature.
Mm-hmm. So you said we will learn these things shortly?
Yes. You must remember that discoveries that you make today are really rediscoveries. A form of special learning.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine to see an entire world structured with the same concept of the pyramidal design throughout? And that which supported the pyramidal design there? What a boring place. Everything's the same.
Everything's the same?
Yeah, how would you like that? You might say we allow you for your own evolution, even in design and application. Hmm. That creativity is the essence of the divine nature. To stifle it would be stifling the very divinity that flows within all of you. Hmm. Creativity is divinity. Standardization is anti-divine.
Hmm. That's beautiful. That is just creativity is divinity.
The essence of it.
The essence of it.
Why do you think that you search for the creator?
Mm-hmm.
Because he put a bit of himself in you, in us.
Mm-hmm.
That we may be allowed to be alive to make the necessary life movements, decisions. To be just that. Creative, divine, intelligent, Many times, intelligent doesn't always make intelligent decisions.
Yes, that's where they make the wrong decisions for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Not for to prosper humanity and it's just a shame that humans are suffering so much on this planet, and it just doesn't have to be. Seems like the wrong people are steering the masses in the wrong direction. Nothing like natural food and natural pure water. That's all we really need. Or maybe, Shaharon, you could think of many other things we could really need or really should have. Is there a magic thing you could tell us to aid the people who really aren't creative or deep thinkers to open their minds to a better understanding for our lives? It seems like people seem to be in what we call a rut or a just going in the wrong direction. Creativity is, I mean, that's how we got out of ox carts and got away from horse-drawn carriages.
What is wrong with horse-drawn carriages?
Nothing. It's very reliable, but if you want to get from this part of the world to the other part of the world, or if you want to travel a distance, our automobiles are, we have headlights and, you know, comfort inside, and we can travel at what we consider a decent rate of speed just to get around a little bit in our own community. But our solar system is really our own community, our own neighborhood. And just to be able to, I mean, we send our spacecraft out to Saturn and take pictures of your architectural world, and we can see them from telescopes, and we have several pictures, but there's a group of people on this planet who will not allow that to be shown, and they keep a blind eye to the whole thing. It does stifle our creativity, is what the problem is. So intelligence is very important for us to exercise. Thinking. We need to be better thinkers. But I like hearing what you have to say about the pyramid. Is there something else you could tell us that we don't know?
It is most important that what you already know, you include in your life experience. The divine voice that resides in you is the key that opens all the mystery. If you persist in its leading, you will find yourself experiencing a wealth of experience. Where you're at right now is temporary abode, but you must gather for yourself as much life experience that takes you hand in hand with the divine voice. And in appreciation for all that is, both natural and that which you make yourselves, for they are all a result of the nature of the divine voice within you. Do not escape that voice. For if you do escape that voice, great void will swallow you up. You would lose the compass and bearing that is necessary to navigate into the areas which are not known and make proper choices. Without that bearing upon that timing and that initial fragment of the divine within yourselves, there can be no wondrous thing that can happen to you, no magical influence. If you lose that, you lose that very essence, a spark and wonder of life. Therefore, say to you, give an ear and have your voices ready, not simply only to ask, but also to sing a voice of appreciation for that which you've gained so far, and moving forward from that point with that voice of appreciation toward the divine voice, signal a true influence on flow, because it will, because in that appreciation would be a sharing of the same voice throughout, making a new destiny creation of your own abode, one of light and life, one that will never end.
Well, we would like to live on and never end. There's always wonder to see.
Even that will perish, even if you do understand that. Mm-hmm. All things must be renewed. In this continual renewal process is not something that happens once or twice. It is a continual and ongoing process. You might say you continue, and as you put your foot forward, a new walkway appears right in front of you. And as you continue your walk in alignment with the voice, that walkway will continue to appear just in front of you, discovering more and more as you move on. But if you escape that divine voice, your next step may cause you to fall off this path. Mm-hmm. And if you do fall off, ask, and you'll be put right back on it as if you've never fallen before. Mm-hmm. And then continue our exploration. Mm. I bid you farewell. Ay, Eharek, Ahashon.
Farewell, Shaharon. Thank you so much for coming on, enlightening us once again. We all love to hear what you have to say. And very interesting. Wow. Ahoy, Michael.
Took you on a ride, I guess.
Yes. Yes. That's just... You know, when Shaharon says, well, the divine voice within you and make proper choices, that thing about making proper choices, it's like a chess game. It's just every move is very important. Every choice you make is very important. And every time the next move comes, the choices are all sort of the same, but they're all, it's like a whole new bunch of choices.
Yeah. Never ends.
Never ends. And he said there can be no magical influence. Wow, that was... amazing. And creativity, that's what I just... That's what life is about. Just creating things to make our lives even better, little at a time. And I like hearing about the pyramid. That was a long time ago. I still have my book on the pyramids, but those. Almost like those ancient explorers that were exploring the pyramids. Some of them broke in, and what is this place about? Who built this? How could they build this? How could it be so perfect? And how could you lift these stones so high? And what's this chamber for? Then they said, "Oh, it was a burial spot for the king." And, the king was only 12 years old, so they had to start building that long before he was born. All things that just don't make sense. But there it is. I've never been there. Wanted to go there, but...
Yeah, I wanted to go there, but it was too much upheaval. They found out that it wasn't good thing to destabilize their government. Tourists stop coming, which is, believe it or not, tourism back in the day of Christ to the pyramids was still its primary economic.
Oh my gosh.
Funky.
How could they get there back then?
Yeah, they walked. Road. Yeah. Real slow.
And how did they even know it was there to get there?
Yeah, stories. Yeah. So it remained that way. You can even, just so long ago, it was that way. Tourist economy. One of the oldest tourist economies in the entire world.
Yeah, in the entire world. Wow. Well, that was... I and many other people enjoy hearing what you have to say, and also when Shaharon comes on. This time Eric came on. Wow. Very, very interesting. Love to see this transcribed, what Shaharon had to say. This is...
No.
I'm still... Like, my mind is still blown. I'm still absorbing this.
Well...
So, that's... continue and ongoing. Well, maybe we should say aloha now, and we can get to John from Columbia, Maryland, and Calvin from Salt Lake City next time.
Okay.
And also Paul J.S. has has more questions for Shaharon to answer. And that was interesting about the Japanese, that this was thousands of years ago, and boy, if they could help the Japanese get underground before some huge explosive action was coming, that they're fast workers, don't you think? Get them safe.
Yeah. You can, Japan has a fable about that time.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. The origins of the Japanese people.
I have some old Japanese books from when people would go to Japan, maybe in the 50s, and they would have those tourist books about the customs of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And those some of my old samurai books and those stories. Well, my friend, we will talk next time. And
okay,
stay warm.
All right.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Bye.